Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Crying in the Book Club. I'm your host, Jean-Luc. I am joined, as always, by my friends and yours. Emily is here.
Hello.
And Alex is also here. Hello.
Hello. Check out Rebel Moon, now streaming on Vimeo.
Is that true?
Damn.
Yep.
They got that shit on Vimeo.
It should be. I love Vimeo.
Do you say it should be streaming on Vimeo because you think its quality is Vimeo caliber, or because you really enjoy Vimeo's platform and want to watch your favorite movies on your favorite video
platform? It's a yes and yes for me, Jean-Luc. It's Vimeo is Vimeo.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
We're just lucky to be living in the era.
And as we know, Vimeo killed the radio star. So
Vimeo killed the radio star. Rip the radio star. Fucking Vimeo.
Rip to the radio star. I think the only time I've been on Vimeo in the last like 5 years is when Connor O'Malley put up a YouTube video that got instantly DMCA'd, and then he reposted it on Vimeo and they didn't take it down, so he posted the Vimeo link. Watched it there. And it's a beautiful Odyssey.
I gotta be real. I don't think I've ever been on Vimeo a single time in my life.
That kind of makes sense. I don't really think it's a relevant platform. I mean, I assume people use it to host their videos and stuff. But I don't know.
I don't know.
Any Vimeo content I see is usually cross-posted to YouTube.
Well, yeah, I would assume most stuff ends up on YouTube. But I think maybe it's just the DMCA thing, because YouTube will like take away your account if you get DMCA'd too many times.
Sure.
I don't know if Vimeo will do that, but I don't know. I'm not a video platform expert. I do watch stuff on YouTube from time to time. But, you know, I used to be a big Daily Motion guy back in the day.
Oh.
I only ever used Daily Motion to watch cartoons extra legally.
Yes, I didn't use it so much for cartoons, but yeah, like movies and TV shows and stuff used to wind up on Daily Motion. I mean, they used to wind up on YouTube, but YouTube, you know, basically in the time that I've been actively using YouTube has been pretty stringent about copyright stuff, so
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Except when they play well, I guess if it's its own channel, it doesn't matter. But I've been enjoying Space Ghost Coast to Coast 30th
anniversary. Oh yeah. Adult Swim put up that channel that is just live streaming episodes of Space Ghost. I was incredibly lucky to tune in right at the moment of, and I got to watch the entire episode of the Conan O'Brien episode where Space Ghost is just following the ant on the ground the whole time. Masterwork of television writing, and was extremely glad to tune in right for that. Exactly.
I also watched that episode, and I've watched a few episodes here and there. I had never seen an episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Does not surprise me.
It kept showing up in my fucking YouTube recommendations for like 2 weeks straight, so I was finally like, okay, fine, I'll click on this. And actually, it was pretty funny, so I enjoyed it.
It's have you seen the Eric Andre show? It's like...
Yes.
It's very much like, oh, this feels like it's like... He got inspiration from this, and then I search it. He's like, yeah, my major inspiration was Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and I was like,
that makes sense. Like, I actually knew that he officially said that was an influence on the show, but that it makes, absolutely it makes tracks
very sense.
I was recently watching Eric Andre clips actually, because there's a college football player who got drafted whose name is Michael Penix. And when he got drafted, everyone posted the Eric Andre Mike Penis clip, which of him, you know, running around saying at clubs saying his name is Mike Penis.
Yes.
Which, you know, is very, I love Eric Andre.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was surprised Space Ghost Coast to Coast is as funny as it was. I've probably seen
100%.
They're kind of playing the same 10 episodes over and over again over the last 3 weeks. So every time I tune, I'm like, I've seen this one. And for me,
you should just, like, I think, is it not on, I feel like it was on HBO at some point, or
Adult Swim, right? So it would be on HBO if it's anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that does in Canada.
Oh, but, yeah. Yeah, that also complicates things.
It's funny because they actually released a new Space Ghost comic like last week. Because it's the anniversary of Space Ghost. I think it might be the anniversary of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, not Space Ghost.
Sure.
But the comic, and I haven't read it, but I was listening to a podcast where they talked about it. And apparently it is way more in line with the original Space Ghost. And I didn't know that apparently it was always a TV show, but the original cartoon is like,
serious. Yeah.
That's like a space.
I know he was in like, he was in like Wacky Races and stuff. I know that, but I thought he was always kind of goofy.
It is like ostensibly a serious cartoon.
But there's one with Charlton Heston. I don't know if you guys have seen that one.
I actually did see the Charlton Heston one.
I think that's my favorite one, where Charlton Heston's like, in the movie Planet of the apes ate at this table, and the chimpanzees ate at this table. And then Zorax is going like, nah, for like 30 seconds, and Charlton's like, I see. It's a good, it's a great show. I mean, I never heard of it until now, which, I mean, I'm curious if Chad... Wait,
really?
I've never...
You had not that this was YouTube very recent for you,
like Jean-Luc's, like 2 weeks ago when it started.
Oh my god! YouTube, yeah, no, I used to I would occasionally see episodes of it when I was a kid on Adult Swim, but I didn't like watch them.
Well,
because
you are old, and Alex and I are spring.
You guys are youthful. Not even that much younger than me, but it is true that I am older than both of you.
I just never had like cable growing up, so that's why I was watching Arthur till I was like 20.
Canadian cable, I can only assume, you know, different channels.
Yeah, we had Adult Swim, like it was broadcast on something called Teletoon here, and it was like Teletoon at night for that stuff, but I never really watched it.
I definitely
did not have Adult Swim in Kuwait.
No, I believe that. I didn't actually like really get into watching Space Ghost until I was in college, and I was dating a guy who sometimes his mom's house would not have internet. So like we had a bunch of Space Ghost episodes downloaded to, we had a bunch of episodes of various things downloaded to his computer, and one of them happened to be all of Space Ghost Coast to Coast. So I haven't seen every episode, but I've seen like a bunch of random episodes because we would occasionally just like throw that on as something
that's
to watch.
Super cool.
Did you also watch like Aqua Teen Hunger Force? And
that
all
was around that same time. Yeah.
That era.
See, that's why I think Chad, because I feel like Chad has seen Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
I have a lot of friends who are like more like Emily and Chad's age who are like big Adult Swim. Well, not a lot. I have like two or three other friends who are Chad and Emily's age who are big. Like,
it took actually becoming an adult to appreciate most Adult Swim content because as a kid, I just like it. The bizarre humor didn't like really connect with me. Also, I was a very, very pretentious and autistic child. So that like it just that I was just like, I don't understand this. But as an adult who has now drank alcohol and smoked weed, I can appreciate the comedy stylings of Master Shake and Meat Wad and Frylock is the other
I have not watched a lot of Adult Swim shows in my life. I found the episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force that I've seen to be quite funny. And when I was in high school, I loved Metalocalypse, but that was...
Oh, Metalocalypse is genuinely good. Like,
yeah, that was just something
you
that
don't
I
have
saw
to be out. An adult to get into Metalocalypse for sure.
Yeah, well, I was something I sought out because I was, you know, into metal. So
absolutely, absolutely.
Heard about the show and watched it.
Last thing about Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I was just surprised seeing how many episodes there are. There's like 120 episodes of this show.
Yeah, there's definitely... Like, I was thinking like it was closer to 100, but yeah, like...
I think it aired for like a decade.
Yeah, it like...
It's just like wild to think about. Yeah. Cool show. Honestly, like it's probably still doing their 30th anniversary thing on YouTube because
it is.
I thought it was just be a week. I thought it'd just be a week, but it looks
still kicking
all year. I really hope they add new episodes because I've like.
I just tuned in, and it was an episode that I've already seen. It was the episode with his grandpa or his dad.
Yeah,
his dad is played by like a wrestler, like someone Savage, maybe.
It's Macho Man Randy Savage. Yeah.
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 Which is it? I did enjoy that episode, but anyway, Hello. Despite having talked about.
Let's read some Space Ghost comics.
Space Ghost May.
I'm not sure how many Space Ghost comics there actually are. I assume there's got to be.
I read they were definitely in when they did that Hanna-Barbera sort of little not reboot, but they put them in the DC universe. Anyway, they had that line. I'm pretty sure they had a Space Ghost comic.
Neat,
but I
do not. Space Ghost 2016. I assume that's
That's the time. It was near Rebirth time, so that would make sense.
Yeah,
yeah, it was when they were doing the Flintstones stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, written by Joe Kelly. Wow.
Yeah, we should read some of those.
Mr. Artist Man.
We could at some. Well, we should not read most of them because most of them are really bad. But
we could read a couple of them.
If you're talking about Space Ghost comics, then sure. But if you're talking about the DC Hanna-Barbera ones, I'm not rereading most of those.
Oh, I mean, I liked what I read of the Flintstones comic.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's been a while, so I can't verify that I would still enjoy it. But
I'm a huge Mark Russell head, and I hated the Flintstones.
I only read a couple of it. I didn't read the whole thing. So
I would say I'm a bigger Russell head than you. Not to pull rank, Jean-Luc.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I also it's like the one piece of Mark Russell thing where I was just like,
yeah,
I don't like this. I don't.
Alex and I are both haters.
But also, I have a thing with the Flintstones, and I don't know, it was just weird to the whole thing was just made me uncomfortable.
Okay.
And I only read comics that make me comfortable.
Uh huh. That was just why we decided to read The Runaways this week.
This week.
not yet.
Oh.
The Pervert is kind of a comfort comic, you know? It's just whenever you need something, just chill and with no bad.
You invite your homies over.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about The Pervert is that it's super chill and it's not going to
feel good comic of the year. Every year.
Nothing really bad happens to anyone.
No.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about. That's all I've heard about.
Pervert's really fucking good.
I'm excited because I'm the only person who hasn't read it. So, That'll be fun to dive into.
Hell
surprised
yeah.
We didn't evangelize it.
No. You did evangelize it enough. I just never got around to it. So this is me the Pride Month episode where we watch it or where we read it is me making myself finally read it.
Fair enough.
Because I see a lot of Remy Bordel art on Twitter, so it just is a constant reminder. But anyway, the book at hand.
Yeah, we're here to talk about, something that I would say is almost as good, but not quite.
Other gays.
The Runaways.
Runagays?
Runagays. Ooh. See, we just have an excuse to do June more Runaways comics in Pride in June.
This book is very homophobic. I'll just say that.
These issues were not as homophobic as the previous 12, which featured a lot of Chase describing things as fruity in a way that I did not love.
These issues are definitely not as homophobic as some of the people on the forums, so we can say put it like that. We will be doing a dive into the forums again, though.
I'm excited. So excited.
So yeah, this is we're closing out Brian K. Vaughan's tenure on the Runaways. This is issues 13 to 24 of the Runaways Volume 2, written by Brian K. Vaughan and drawn by Adrian Alfona. There's a one fill-in artist, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, other than that, it is the team that created the Runaways, and this is the last time either of them wrote or drew the Runaways. And after good this riddance. Was taken over by the hated Joss Whedon and driven into the ground for a few issues, and then eventually it came back. But yeah, we all know the Runaways. There's not too much here to really go into other than just the plot summary.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll try to get through pretty quick so that we can actually talk about some of the stuff that happens in more depth. But, We'll get there. Mm-hmm. These issues, issue 12 is the last issue we read last month. Issue 13 is just a one-shot issue about Molly. She gets separated from the rest of the team and kidnapped by a villain called the Provost, who kidnaps runaway children and uses them to commit bank heists and other robberies.
Pretty cool.
Which is a very stupid concept.
Very silly.
But hey, it's fun. And she is able to, you know, come up with a plan and
very Molliver twist.
Well, yeah. He literally calls them the
The Artful Dodgers. Yeah, Artful Dodgers. I thought of Molliver Twist.
Molliver Twist is.
I like Molliver Twist. If I started a band,
you'd call it Molliver Twist.
It'd be called Batman and Robin.
But he would think about calling it Molliver Twist for a second.
If there was a member called named either Molly or Oliver, you would maybe consider calling it Molliver Twist.
Absolutely.
So that's just a one shot. Issue 14 sort of fills in the some backstory. We catch up with Alex's RPG friend, or MMORPG friends, I should say, from the very first issue, who are able to piece together that Alex was the son of the Pride, or one of the Pride's children, and died along with them because one of the members hacks into his computer and gets access to his diary. So they also are able to find the Book of the Gaboran, and they find a resurrection spell, which they plan to use to get Alex back. But despite having the book, they don't actually have the decoder ring that is, you know, key to understanding the book. And so there's a bit of a translation error. And instead of reanimating Alex, they not only kill one of their own members, but also reanimate Alex's father, Jeff, instead. And it's not exactly a reanimation. They more teleport the 1985 version of Alex's dad to the present. So this is a version of his dad who, like, it has already joined the Pride, but, like, doesn't know about his son yet and is now being told, hey, your son's dead.
Yeah.
And also, you're dead and all of your friends in the Pride are also dead. Mm-hmm. And your kids killed you.
Mm-hmm.
But he's able to, you know, he runs a pretty tight, you know, propaganda campaign on the MMORPG losers and convinces them that the
Pride that difficult.
No, they're like...
Despite the fact that these are people in their, like, 20s and 30s, they are very easily convinced.
Mm-hmm. It takes nothing.
Anything. Yeah, so they believe that, you know, the Runaways were the bad guys, actually, and the Pride were heroes keeping Los Angeles safe. And, of course, you know, crime has spiked since the Pride went away. And we all know that the crime statistics, you know, you just need to look at the number, and that's the only thing that's important about crime statistics.
Number go up.
Number go up, number go down. There's no other analysis you can or even should do of crime statistics. But they're able to exploit a lot of weaknesses in the Runaways. The first one is that apparently they can hack into Victor and use him as a spy camera. So they basically know what's going on with the Runaways at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to exploit some of the interpersonal weaknesses between the characters, such as the fact that Nico came on to Chase in the previous arc, and that drives a wedge between her and Gert. And as that wedge is driven between her and Gert, it, you know, results in them losing a fight to the MMORPG kids. To be fair, the MMORPG kids are kind of juiced with the Pride's weapons and stuff. So
yeah,
it's not like they're just like, you know, some dweebs, you know, with no muscle mass brawling with the Runaways. But they still get owned, and Molly gets captured by Jeff and the MMORPG kids. The Runaways sort of return to the hostel, and, you know, they're falling apart. And who shows up as the Runaways are falling apart to bring them back together? Carolina, the goat. The goat, the heart of the team, back at the perfect time. And Nico has a very, very straight moment.
Very normal guy.
And just as normal of a reaction when she learns that Zavin came with Carolina. That's, you know, very epic from Nico. Very epic stuff from Nico. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now with two more members on their team, they sort of refocus their efforts around getting Molly back. They also find out that Victor was the mole. He was the way that they were getting all that information.
Mm-hmm.
But they're able to sort of like mend the bridges and make up, and they head to the Los Angeles Observatory for their final showdown with the MMORPG kids. I found that I really enjoy calling them the MMORPG kids. Maybe it's dumb. But Victor transforms the frog into a Transformers style mech and beats the shit out of the MMORPG kids.
Does he transform the frog? I thought he transformed like their vehicle.
No, that's the frog that he transforms. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Yeah, I can fact check myself.
Because the frog is still intact the next time that we see
it. Well, I think he transforms it back into the frog.
Okay, maybe so. Maybe I misread. Either way.
But while that fight is happening, Nico rushes in to save Molly and Jeff shoots her. But did anybody realize there's a Skrull on the team now? And Skrulls have this really cool ability called shapeshifting.
I gotta admit, that got me. I forgot about that moment.
And, you know, maybe not as familiar with Secret Wars, which, you know, the underlying plot element.
I remember that Zavin was a Skrull. So, like, that was always a possibility. I got absorbed into the comic.
Yeah, that's a good sign. Zavin reveals that, hey, it's me, Zavin, not Nico. And Nico has saved Molly. The three of them are able to actually escape, but before they get out of the observatory, which is now burning down, Chase rushes in to try and save them, try and help them, because they hadn't come out yet. So those three leave the observatory, and Gert is like, oh my god, where's Chase? And they're like, we don't know, where is Chase? And so Gert rushes in after Chase, finds Chase, you know, 1v1 in Jeff, and this ends with Gert being killed. And with Jeff being sent back in time to his old body. As Gert dies, she transfers her mental link with Old Lace to Chase, and then Chase and Old Lace, after they bury Gert, end up leaving the runaways with both the Book of the Gaborim and, crucially, the Dakota Ring. In the next arc, the runaways are, of course, grieving the death of Gert. We get a flashback to when they're burying the old Gert, who came back with time travel. And, you know, we see everybody pretty sad, except Zavin. Zavin's like, a million people just died off planet. Why do you care about this bitch? And they're like, what the fuck are you? Carolina's like, what the fuck are you on about, brother? Anyway, while this is happening, one of the dirty cops who had been working with the Pride tries to sell a relic that the Pride had to a pawn shop owner who, when holding it, wishes that things would go back to the way they were. And the relic, you know, fulfills his wish and transforms him into a giant monster that is intent on abolishing Starbucks. the runaways show up and fight this giant monster. They get owned because Zavin fucking sucks. And they're able to sort of withdraw, and Nico comes up with a bright idea of trying to find the source of the monster and dealing with that instead. While this is happening, Chase kidnaps Lotus, who is the woman from the MMORPG kids. The other ones, like, one of them went to a mental institution and one of them went to the Peace Corps, apparently. So I don't really know why one of them went to a mental institution. Like, that seems pretty... Or rehab or...
The implication was that it was like a mental institution.
Yeah, it's just a weird. I don't really get that. We don't get a lot of those characters on page. So
no.
But anyway, he takes her to the Gaborim, kind of intending to sacrifice her and get Gert back.
Mm-hmm.
But he backs out at the last moment.
Can't do it.
He can't do it. He's a pussy. Doesn't really love Gert that much, which is why when he does bring her back, she breaks up with him. He's not fucking committed.
That's exactly why that happens.
But then, you know, the runaways are able to trace the source of, you know, this huge monster back to the pawn shop. They find an old picture of the owner with his wife, and they're like, oh my god, he was a wife guy, and now he doesn't know what to do.
He can't be a wife guy anymore.
And so Zavin and Nico team up. Zavin, you know, shapeshifts into the dude's wife, and Nico, you know.
Kind of fucked up.
Yeah, and they use that to sort of talk him down, and they end the crisis. They end up returning to the hostel. They're all kind of wiped out. I mean, Zavin got their shit clapped. Carolina needs to recharge. Molly's, you know, very eepy. And Nico, I don't know, Nico's just in her feelings. Nico's in her feelings for all of this. An important thing I didn't mention is that immediately after Gert died, she hooked up with Victor and then immediately felt really bad about it. And that's something that sort of comes back in this arc where they start taking things a little bit more seriously as a couple. But as all of this is happening, Chase rolls up to the hostel and ties Nico up, you know, kind of implying like he's going to sacrifice her for Gert. But he's like, no, I'm sacrificing myself. But I need you tied up in this chair because I have to tell you some shit before I go do that.
BKB loves a cliffhanger, and Nico being tied up is the cliffhanger. Yeah. So you know, you have to justify the actions of the cliffhanger in the next issue.
There's a lot of cliffhangers in this arc specifically, or the issues we read that are like, oh no, that's actually not what happened. And you find out after 10 pages of talking, and it's like, you could have just not done the cliffhanger, man.
Well, I don't know. But it's better with the cliff. You say that because you read them all probably in one or two sittings, but imagine if you had that end panel of Nico in her dream space seeing Chase, and you had to wait a month. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Did Chase go?
No, cool, I get it. Cool?
Yeah, it's good.
I just feel like, especially in this one, there's I love BKV's, you know, his endings. It's like, oh wow, cliffhanger. I feel like there was way too much whiplash in this one where it was like, this is how it is, just kidding, this is, and because there are a lot of issues, and I did read them all in the sitting, so
it's not that it's bad, it's just that there's several of them in a row, and when you do read them like this, it is kind of like oh
absolutely. And I mean, they do the Nico death fake out as a cliffhanger as well.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see these especially feel very, you know, manipulative, I guess. It's not an ideal word, but you know.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah. So, but the real reason Chase has her tied up is because he wants to take the Staff of One so that Nico can go back to having a normal life, and he basically wants all of them to not really be superheroes anymore. Mm-hmm. Is kind of the implication. So he goes to sacrifice himself, but the runaways follow him to the donut shop where the Ghiborim have this cool little portal where they have their house that they're living in, which is about to collapse in 12
hours.
They're
so cute. They're just
the Ghiborim?
Living their lives. They're just oh, we're going to stop existing in a week if you don't get us a human sacrifice. You guys are some shitheads before, weren't you?
We're just small. The Ghiborim are just small beings.
We have to
leave them alone.
They're just regular men.
So Chase tries to sacrifice himself, but it turns out that if you try to sacrifice yourself, that means that you're not a pure sacrifice for the Ghiborim anymore.
It was. It's very Catholic Church. It's very much
there's a lot of Catholic. There's a lot of Catholicism.
They need an unwilling participant.
Yeah. And so, conveniently, there's a bunch of unwilling participants about to show up. Hello. Namely Nico, who is, you know, the most innocent of all of them.
Surely.
Who they're the one. Well, that's what they say.
I know. But I just very silly.
We want the extremely innocent goth girl. Same, but you know, it's not specifically Nico. I know an adult aged, you know, innocent goth girl, of course. But anyway, I'm probably gonna cut that out. Not a good bit. But anyway, the Ghiborim attempt to consume Nico, but they are defeated by the runaways, also with the help of, you know, a voice in Molly's head that's been talking to her. We don't actually see what the voice says ever, but it is revealed in the end that
kill them now.
It is revealed in the end that the voice is Alex, who is in this sort of pocket dimension with the children of the Ghiborim, who of course we know from the Rainbow Rowell run. Mm-hmm. We will see them in the future, but not here. And yeah, then BKV and Adrian Alfona leave the book, and they're like, yo, we got this great dude to pick up after us. And as far as I know, that's true, because I never read the issues on.
Yeah, I hear it was a movie person.
So. Oh, cool.
John Carpenter doesn't typically work out well.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter's The Runaways would be fascinating.
The forum definitely, because I guess it got announced around the time issue 19 came out. So the forum has a lot of speculation about who it could be.
That's funny.
Well, it got announced that BKV left, but not that Joss Whedon was taking over.
Oh. Yeah.
And they're like, yo, do you think they could get Grant Morrison? Which would have gone crazy.
Holy shit.
Jesus Christ. That would have gone
from like
so
a 7
hard.
To like a 12.
Yeah.
That would have been so hard.
That would have been insane. Someone also mentioned Garth Ennis, which would have been a horrible fit, but also
would have
gone
all died.
Crazy.
It would have also been fascinating,
if horrific.
It literally would have been that viral tweet. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the one where Garth Ennis, it's like Garth Ennis writing the Teen Titans. I fucking hate these kids. I hope they all get AIDS and die. And then the next bit is Garth Ennis 6 months later sobbing. I just feel so bad for these kids. Why do they have to get AIDS and start dying?
I have not seen this tweet, but like real.
I mean, that's the curse of being a monthly comics writer, writing a couple issues at a time. You reap a little bit, but then you gotta sow, I guess. Poor guy.
It's a good tweet. I'm gonna send it.
Yeah, please do. I would love to send it, or I would love to see it.
It's pretty good. So I got I didn't remember it word for word, but it, you know,
sure.
It's a very funny tweet. But anyway, we should talk about some Runaways. I'm curious how you guys felt about these issues, you know, compared to the first set of issues that we read last episode. I mean, there's a lot of different character stuff that goes on here. I don't know if there's anywhere in particular you want to start. There's, you know, obviously tension between Zavin and Nico. There's Gert dying and Chase being all fucked up over it. Chase has his dark arc. So there's a lot in here.
I will say the Zavin and Carolina Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds scene was very important to me as a teenager, and still gets me a little emotional even now. So it was nice to revisit that. I love Carolina's like wedding dress. I think is just incredible. Like character design, and she just looks gorgeous anytime that she is on the page in it. And even though it is silly to see her like running around at the end of that bit on, you know, like trying to help out the Runaways and stuff while she's like literally in her wedding dress, it's very, very funny. But I liked getting to see Zavin and Carolina in this arc. I hate the scene where Zavin turns into Nico because she thinks that will be pleasing to Carolina, and it makes me want to beat BKB with a brick. But other than that, I don't know, that scene just like annoys me, and I don't like it. But otherwise, I've previously mentioned in last year's Runame, Carolina and Zavin were important to me as a teenager, and so I have a lot of emotional attachment to like their arc and stuff. So I enjoyed getting to revisit some of that.
Yeah, I also think that scene is, you know, kind of shitty, but I think it also does speak to some of Zavin's character that doesn't get super elaborated on in these issues, because frankly, they're not there for a ton of them. Mm-hmm. They should sort of show up towards the end and are kind of just a foil for Nico. Mm-hmm. But I think you also get that scene where Zavin is talking to Molly, and Molly asks them why they're not always in one body or another. And I think it sort of is like a reaction to Zavin's sort of discomfort with being in the female body, which mm-hmm. also is something that I think weirdly it came up in the Joss Whedon run. Like one of the few things I think was actually kind of good about it is the
I remember that coming up.
The way that, you know, the way that it deals with Zavin's, like, I guess body dysmorphia is what you would call it now, is, you know, kind of a compelling note for that character, especially because, you know, they're basically only doing it to
so that Carrie agrees to
marry them. But
you would maybe I think that this would probably fall more into dysphoria rather than dysmorphia. Yeah, just to make sure that that we get the terminology correct there. But I do think that that's interesting, and there are ways in which this is like treated incredibly progressively for the time, but then you also like anytime they're trying to like do a comedy moment, like there's so many times like Victor is like weirdly like one of the people who is most prevalently like using terms like she-male to describe Zavin, like for basically no reason other than to like kind of be a dick. Like it just like it feels like there's like a little bit of an antagonism that I found kind of annoying, but I get like it is very typical of the time. In a lot of ways, the way that they handle like Carolina and Zavin and just Zavin as a character is a lot better than I would have anticipated for the time, but still just annoying to see all of the quips about it.
Yeah, no, I think that at the time, maybe the connotation around a term like that might have been slightly different than it is. I mean, obviously, it's still shitty, but
it was still an insult, but you know, like.
Yeah. Also, Victor notably is sort of committed Christian, so it makes sense he'd be like the total piece of shit.
And especially he's a Catholic.
Yeah, which, you know, you hate to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You hate to see it.
I also felt like the prevalence of religion in this book, like these issues, was a little weird. Like it doesn't come that much, but like Nico and Victor have a couple of conversations, and there's like one time where they're talking and Victor is like, do you think Chase should see a priest? And then like Nico's like, no. And then he's like, well, what about a therapist? And it's like, well, maybe a therapist should have been your first suggestion. My dude.
Yeah. There's also that moment where Nico is like praying for
birthdays,
which that I kind of understand more as just a general response.
Yeah, no, that felt,
I'm so desperate, I don't know what to do.
That felt fairly normal to me.
But then when Victor shows up, he talks like a fucking like Christian camp
counselor. Sounds like a youth counselor.
Yeah, it's such a weird moment. I mean, I think it works, but it is a really weird moment, especially since
it's kind of clunky.
It's also not an element of Victor's character that shows up until literally like right at this
point. Yeah, it does feel like it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. And then there's that whole bit where they kind of justify it, where Ultron designed him to be like simultaneously the most spiritual mm-hmm. and also the most logical hero so that he would appeal to people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that also feels like it's literally just there to set up the stupid, we can turn him off with a paradox by giving him a
paradox. Yeah, the paradox.
Yeah, honestly, oh my god.
I say stupid, but I say stupid in an endearing way. I think it's funny that the Chase asking him a paradoxical question just like short circuits Victor. Like,
okay, isn't that a Simpsons reference?
Is that a Simpsons reference? That specific?
I guess
one?
Yeah. Okay. Like because I also don't really know the Simpsons very well, but like I feel like the like, can God make a sandwich so big he couldn't eat it or whatever is like a Simpsons thing.
If it is, I don't remember. I've watched a lot of Simpsons in my life, but I don't remember. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if there is something similar. There is a Simpsons joke.
Yeah.
Could Jesus microwave a burrito so hot that he himself could not eat it?
Okay, maybe that. Yeah, I guess.
Same idea. Yeah.
I was thinking it was, for some reason, I was thinking it was more specific that it was, in fact, a sandwich and not a burrito. But okay, that makes me feel, because I was like, when I read it, I was kind of annoyed because I thought they were just doing a Simpsons reference. But I feel better about it now.
Well, yeah, and Homer just completely owns Flanders with this bit.
Yeah.
Good.
Which is what Chase does to Victor.
To Victor. Yeah. Victor is the Ned Flanders of the Runaways.
Many people are saying this.
Everyone is saying this, in fact.
Yes. There's also the, after Victor gets sort of brain fogged, who is it that's talking to him? He's like, I don't understand Mexican.
Molly.
Oh, God.
You know it's Molly. Like,
yeah.
Molly manages to break him out of his like paradox confusion or whatever, which whatever, fine. She like comes up with like a, I don't know, she comes up with an answer or whatever and gets him out of his paradox funk or whatever.
Yeah. I think like that line is also pretty bad, but I think that line is also just more of like at the time stuff like that was much more prevalent as sort of quote unquote comedy writing.
No, yeah, that was
not
like,
funny and doesn't age well.
It was very much like the type of nerd comedy of the time, and I can appreciate it on that level.
Yeah, what do we think about Nico and Victor?
I don't like that. I find it annoying that BKV seems to want to like shove Nico off to like whatever single boy is in the periphery.
That's kind of her character in like the last in this whole run, really.
And I find that annoying and frustrating because like I don't like that. That is a thing that she is defined by, and it also seems like she doesn't like that that's a thing that she's defined by. So I don't know. I don't inherently like, there's nothing about Nico and Victor as like a couple that specifically I don't like. I find the like the whole scenario like in the con Nico coming on to Victor did not just fall out of a coconut tree. It exists within the context of everything that has come before it.
I like that you remember that whole quote now.
I mean, it's
pretty good.
Honestly, she was cooking with that one is she all I can really say. Like
for like the only time.
This is the only time that Kamala Harris has ever said something where she was cooking and somehow like it just managed to be like the most true thing that anyone has ever said. But that's my
I do like that Nico finally has the revelation. Or comes to the conclusion towards the end of this that, like, you know, maybe she doesn't need to always be looking for companionship.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, she is definitely, there's a good deal of, I would say, yearning for Carolina throughout this.
Yeah, there's, I would very easily say that there is a, like, compulsory heterosexuality reading of the way that Nico tries to latch on to, like, the men in her life because she is trying to fill the hole that she doesn't realize that the absence of Carolina has left. Yeah. And I don't know how, like, there are parts of this that there were parts of reading this comic where I felt like that was part of the intention, but also it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to say.
Like, it feels like it's there, but also, like, you could, like, if Brian K. Vaughan was like, no, like, I didn't put that there. I was like, well, like, I guess I was like, I could believe,
so.
I was like, yeah. I could believe that he didn't mean for it to be there, but like,
right.
Because yeah. it's not there to a degree that it feels as intentional as I would have liked it, yeah. You know?
And it is an ongoing, you know, debate in the forums.
I would love to hear from the forum
what Nico's sexuality is.
I mean, I feel like you take one look at Nico and that's the most bisexual character design that has ever been put to paper. So right. Like, I feel like it should be a non-issue, but she does self-identify as straight at least once prior to the Rainbow Rowell run.
That is true.
Also, the phrase "the Rainbow Rowell run" very fun to say.
Yeah, it's good. So there's a number of people who insist, like, you know, Nico is not a lesbian under any circumstances. And then, you know,
my god, waifu could never like women.
There's one guy who's like, well, I don't think Nico's a lesbian, but have you guys ever heard of bisexuality?
Let's almost fucking go.
And then the guy who said that, so this guy says Nico doesn't have to come out because she's not a lesbian. And then the other guy responds, but you don't deny she could be bisexual. And then there's like six comments in between. And then the guy who said that comes back, he says, just the all is in his messages, she's not bisexual either. And so
I wish I had a booing sound effect.
Is this a riddle?
So he's insistent that, you know, she's straight. There's also lots of people on the forums really don't like Nico. There's like one or two
heads.
And everyone else is like, she's a goth slut. I hate her.
She
around a lot.
Not at all shocked.
Somebody hits them with the fact check that, like, because all these people are saying the whole time, like, she slept with like three or four guys throughout the run. And then they get hit with the fact check that, like, I don't think she slept with anyone. No. Like, maybe Victor, but we don't know.
You can reasonably infer from this arc specifically that you could say, like, yeah, she probably had sex with Victor. We have no evidence for... Well,
you say that, but then this guy pulls out the Brian K. Vaughan quote saying they did not. So,
thanks, Brian.
I didn't have that quote on.
Checkmated that. No, I know.
But there is that scene where she's like, this was a mistake. And that's very clearly like
it's implying.
It's very clearly they just hooked up,
like,
coded.
I feel like Brian Kayvon. Yeah. It could just be. It could be a hookup, but not.
They could have just made out, you know, like could have, you know, third base doesn't necessarily mean that you hit a home run, but.
True.
The one thing I will say that people hit on is that, there is a reading of this that is, you know, that obviously without the Rainbow Rowell stuff seems pretty reasonable, which is that, like, throughout the whole run, Nico is basically she's like brooding in her feelings the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And like Carolina leaving, like you could read it reasonably, I think, as them being like obviously very close friends,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of, you know, being the final blow for Nico. But I certainly don't.
I'm sure the people on the forum are like, no, they're just good friends. I had a good friend like this, actually. And then they're like, wait.
Wait, hold up. People were on the forums, there's some people who were very upset that they were wrong about the Alex twist. They thought for sure that they were building to it being to Alex returning instead of, you know, it being his dad. And when
it happens, it was just a fake out, but they do bring back an Alex twist.
They do. Alex, yeah, there is both the scene at the very end and also the bit where they shapeshift into Alex to try to trick. But. You know, people were not super thrilled with. Well, I think people came around on it. There's a lot of they do glaze BKV a lot. They're like, he's the best comic book writer ever. This is the greatest comic.
I mean, this
I've
is the
read.
Era Which, of I, like jerking BKV off. So
oh
like,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I would have literally been doing the same at this time. So like, I can't even.
Yeah.
I can't even.
Here, here's one that I pulled out. This was the first book I read today. BK, all caps. BKV is an absolute god. 10 exclamation points. I mean, the characters he creates just scream real. Amazing issue. So, you know. I guess some of that I don't disagree with,
but.
These guys all nailed that the Nico thing was a fake out and Gert was going to die in the next issue. I don't understand, like, the sort of, like, psychic trickery these guys were doing, because when I first read The Runaways, I did not see the Gert twist coming.
Like, I remember being devastated by the Gert twist when I was a teen.
And people are actually upset about it. People actually seem to really like Gert on the
She deserves
so
it.
I'm happy for that.
What was that person said last forum visit?
Oh yeah, the defensive. Well, there was look. There's a difference between people who like her character and thinking she's hot. They agree she's not hot, but they do like her character. Except for the one guy who thinks she's hot. But the rest
who is correct.
Yeah, the rest don't think she's hot, but they do like her character. So, they're a land of contrast.
Thank God they can see beyond their inability to be attracted to a female character in order to think that she is well written.
Well, one of the worst moments is that there's one of the users who's a big time Nico is a lesbian truther, mm-hmm. and it comes out later that he's just like really wants to see Nico and Carolina hook up on the page, and it's like, oh well, that now you're just
sad?
Like no, like I mean,
me too, no, dog.
No, sure, but it feels very like fetishistic.
I'm being glib, but I know what you mean.
I do like that the way you said it, it like came out. Like people were like, "Wait a minute, you just want to watch?" And then he's like, "Yeah, you got me."
Yeah.
Like, oh,
there is somebody who called the user out for it's all you think about lesbians. That doesn't seem very healthy.
Actually. More common than you think.
You're like very called out here.
Yeah. But yeah. We were sort of talking about Gert, and you know, it is kind of a classic trope to, you know, kill the woman and then use it as a vehicle for her partner to have some character development.
Mm-hmm.
But that does happen here with Chase. I'm curious what you guys thought about Chase getting kind of evil moded.
How else do you expect him to get character development?
I don't know.
That's right, John Luke.
Well, you know, I've never had a girlfriend die, and I've also never had any character development. So
there you go.
Yes,
hell yeah.
I need a girlfriend to die.
That's not the takeaway. I mean, it is a takeaway, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Chase was kind of due for some sort of like his own thing happening. You know, I don't love fridging a female character in any situation, but I also like the Gert death. I remember being like a profound moment when I was reading this as a teenager, as the target audience for this comic. And
Even though the book teases that a character is going to die, like, it is still an effective moment.
Right? Yeah.
When she does die. Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Is, you know, I was kind of shitting on the cliffhangers not leading to anything, but it does serve that moment, which is a big...
She stayed dead for a long time, too.
She stayed dead for way longer than most Marvel Comics characters, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait,
was she back in the... was the Whedon run the one where they time travel?
No, yes, They didn't bring her back, though. They didn't bring her back until the Rowell run, huh?
The Rowell run starts with Chase showing up at Nico's apartment.
Yeah.
Holding Gert, saying that he just brought her back.
Yeah. Because she's like, they've lived a couple of years. And
I thought there was some time travel stuff with Gert.
There is time travel. They travel to the past and they see Gert's parents. And Chase wants to try to steal their time travel pod. so that he can then go back and save her.
Got you.
But that doesn't actually happen.
But it doesn't actually happen, yeah.
Sure.
I also really enjoy the contrast between, I guess not exactly the contrast, but I enjoy that the issue after she dies opens with a scene that we hadn't seen before, a flashback scene we hadn't seen before, with them burying the older Gert.
Yeah, it's like a little bit of a fake out, because it's, if you like, if you read a little too quickly, it's like, oh, or like it's the Gert, like the current Gert burial. So yeah.
Yeah. If you just skim over the months ago part at the top of the page, which is very easy to do. So
only killed the android duplicate. Exactly what I did. I read the page, got to the next page, then was like, wait a minute. And then it was like, oh, months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
It is a really great, it is like one of the sort of standout moments, I think. It's
as many moments of this, like last episode's run and this episode, like as many moments in these 24 issues have made me kind of want to like throttle Brian K. Vaughan. Like there is a lot of really good, really engaging writing, and I did enjoy revisiting Runaways, even if I like had a healthy amount of eye rolling, I would say.
For as much as you can criticize the whole, like, you know, Nico running into like the nearest single guy's arms or whatever, and you know, all that stuff, like the sort of like romantic tension between the characters is exciting. It is very well written.
It felt a little Riverdale-y.
Oh, absolutely. Runaways does channel Riverdale, I think. Well, or the other way around, I suppose. But it is very similar in terms of, like,
I think that Runaways and Riverdale are both channeling the same thing.
Absolutely.
What I would say about that.
They are kind of like trashy teen dramas, but they have moments of, you know, more depth and emotional impact.
Absolutely.
Riverdale lost that by the end a little bit, but, you know.
Yeah.
Runaways was there. BKV was cooking for most of this run. Mm-hmm. I also like that, like, Chase's kayfabe for being evil is very good for the first few issues. Like, I like that. I like, you know, Dark Chase. I think it's kind of fun, even though he can't actually go through with it in the end. And like you said, I think it makes sense for him to be the one to kind of do his own thing, because he is the oldest. He always is kind of like a weird outsider with the Runaways too. Like, he doesn't exactly fit the same mold.
All of them have like,
he's got no power.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, all of them like have powers, and
he's the classic Sokka character. Although I think Avatar: The Last Airbender came out after this, but he's the classic.
But he like, they both fulfill that same archetype for sure, of like the one guy who doesn't really have powers.
But he has heart, I'll tell you.
I like his bandana.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think of the Jaborin coming back? Because in the first arc, I think they're just such a great, cool villain to end on, and the parents bringing them back, and like the threat is so major. Mm-hmm. it's I love those issues, and them coming back, they're kind of like really sad.
I like thematically that, you know, because the whole run kind of thematically is about the Runaways finally like fully shaking off their pasts and kind of actually being able to move on. And so having the Jaborim kind of come back as a part of that, I think thematically it makes sense that there would still be, in the same way that there's like these the lingering influence of their parents over them, there's still this lingering influence of like the big bads who they fought.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think I would have liked to see them like take on more villains. I wish that they actually got the chance to have their own like rogues gallery, as it were. Because there aren't really, and I mean, I understand like from a certain perspective, like Civil War is happening at the end. By the time this run ends, Civil War is happening. At the beginning, House of M is happening. So I understand there's probably limits on like the characters that BKV could pull in terms of villains to use for the story. Maybe from an editorial standpoint, I don't know that for sure, obviously, but
we did get a little nod to House of M, in the Molly, issue.
Yeah, in the,
Because the kids are incredulous that she's actually a mutant, and they say like didn't they all die?
Right, and then there's a bunch of references to the Civil War towards the end.
Yeah.
But I do wish that they were able to have more villains that were like their own villains.
They don't really have like other than the Gaborum, like they don't really have their own villains.
No, not really.
Like the only thing I would say is maybe that gang of werewolves.
The gang of werewolves is awesome,
which I loved very much. Big werewolf fan over here, so loved that a lot. But also,
yeah, I know that
Zabin's fucking stupid Neil deGrasse Tyson. Oh, your moon is always full. You earthlings expand your perspective or whatever. Like,
I love that Zavin is like a fucking heel in these arcs. It's like it feels like a
people just can't handle Zavin's autistic riz.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Well, I think it's effective from a characterization standpoint. Aside from Carolina, I guess Molly comes around at the end, but they're not thrilled with Zavin.
Even textually say they don't really come around on outsiders until a new outsider joins and they have someone to hate.
Yeah. Well, or until someone dies, right? That's the...
Well, that's the thing. Like, someone has to die and then they bring in a new person.
Oh, right.
That was what Molly said.
Yeah. I also love when they're fighting the werewolves, the panel of Chase doing the finger guns and pointing them at it and saying bang, and that's how he sicks old.
Oh, yeah. Extremely good.
Cool. Honestly, there's a lot of old Lace gets a lot of good old Lace in this run. I like that when Chase goes to sacrifice himself, the way they're able to track him is because old Lace leaves a trail for them by, you know, taking a piss all over the place so that they can track old Lace's piss and find Chase.
What a good girl.
I wish there was more old Lace, just in general. They should do like... Oh, go ahead.
No. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say they should do like one of those gimmick books like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur or whatever, but it's just like the old Lace book.
Okay, you know, one...
Gert's not even there, but it's just like a 6-issue mini about.
It's kind of like what they did with Bizarro, who didn't really talk, but they did like 6-issue mini, yeah. And it was like them interacting with other people who kind of fill in the.
Yeah, they should do like the, or like it's all like the Pizza Dog issue, but it's, you know.
Yeah. I think the only piece of official like Runaways merch that exists is an old Lace pin, and I want it more than anything on God's Green Earth. And two, you mentioned Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, which is really just going to give me an excuse to say that I don't know if either of you are aware that there is an incredible Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur cartoon on Disney Channel right now.
I'm aware it exists.
John Luke, straight up, I don't recommend this to you. It is really good. I don't think that it has enough to like probably keep you that invested because it is for children. But like,
this is an insult on me, not you, Jean-Luc, because the way it's going.
No, because Alex, you and I can have a better appreciation for things for children. Jean-Luc never was a child, so he doesn't understand what appeals to children.
Hey, when we were in that motel room in the U.S., we were both children.
Ostensibly.
I was an adult. Well, yeah.
But anyway, the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur cartoon is just like, I think is like, it's really well written and also really well animated and has really, like really interesting like art design and like stylistic choices. And they use a lot of really good music also, like censored versions of like contemporary hip hop music. There's an episode in the first season that has a sequence set to a Childish Gambino song that like, I like literally like my jaw dropped when I realized what fucking song they were playing, because it's Sweatpants by Childish Gambino, which they did have to censor. But yeah, anyway, I just wanted an excuse to talk about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur because that show rocks.
You should read the Marvel Now Moon Girl and Devil
Dinosaur. Can we do some Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur for the show?
The first time
maybe.
I'm not, it's just not, I don't care for it. I never care.
That's fair.
But I think you would really enjoy
that. I probably would, yes.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, no, Old Lace should have her own miniseries for sure.
We need more Old Lace. I
love her. Maybe by next Runame, I'll have acquired one of the Old Lace pins.
Old Lace pins.
We'll see how that goes.
No. Well, unless you guys have any final thoughts, we can start wrapping up the show.
It was specifically the art for the Runaways pin is Scotty Young art.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
For the listeners, I'm showing this through my webcam to Alex and John on the screen. But
is there a price on this thing, or is this just...
This one is... This is an eBay listing, and it's $15.99 with $4.49 shipping. Oh. So if I want to pay $20 for this New York Comic Con exclusive Marvel Runaways pin... I might do that. Have you seen
the variant cover that Scotty Young did for the Rainbow Rowell Runaways book?
That may have been what they got the art for the pin from.
I'm looking at it now, and it does look like it. I'll put it in our group chat. But
yeah, okay, yes,
it's very cute. It's the classic.
Oh yeah, that's definitely it.
Oh, that is exactly the same art that I think they like. Yeah. All they did was maybe her, like, both of her arms are... No, it's just, it is literally the exactly... It's exact art, but without the little children on her back.
Without the, yeah.
Those are extra.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, we can address that sound that's going on right now.
Oh, shit.
Ooh.
What's that sound?
Tinnitus.
It's the Doomsday Clock, which tells us it's time for the Cry Space. Do you guys have Cry Spaces? Did you cry at all this week?
I have a Cry Space, yeah.
Tell me about it. Tell me about when you cried
last. My Cry Space for this week is that so something I've learned about people who grew up in the Midwest is that if you reach a certain level of middle class, your family has a cabin somewhere out in the woods.
The Joss Whedon rule.
It seems like every other person I talk to, their family has a cabin somewhere like an hour outside of town. And
this is more middle class thing.
Specifically, I am finding this more in the Midwest than I have found in other parts of the country necessarily. Probably because the property values are lower, and that allows people to purchase or to own and maintain a cabin. But anyway, the reason that this has come up is because a bunch of my friends today are going up to my friend Cristiano's grandfather's cabin for the next couple of days. And because I have this recording tonight, I don't get to go up until tomorrow morning.
Oh, so what we ruined your life.
Yeah, you ruined my life, and I hate you forever. But
I've canceled podcasts because I was sleepy before. you could have just.
We already had this planned, and I was like, "Well, everybody's going up like Monday night. I'll just go up Tuesday morning." And I've barely missed any time. So, but that's my cry space, is that I'm crying and crying and crying because all of my friends are off having fun right now, and I don't get to have fun until tomorrow morning.
And we're just, not fun.
I don't have any fun recording this show with you guys.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, Alex, do you have anything?
My other cry space is that Alex's display name is still Nerdy Asian Tina Fey.
I'm telling you, any day now I'm going to make that Twitter account. And then the money will start rolling in. And the fan mail. And all that.
Well, if you don't have anything prepared, my cry space is that I saw something on Twitter that I very much wanted to try, which is the...
Oh, yes.
I think you both know about this, but the Mountain Dew Dew Dogs.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
They have a Baja Blast and Code Red flavors, apparently. I haven't verified these are real. It's possible they're not. I haven't, done my research.
Yes, it...
So
could be AI.
It doesn't really look like AI to me, just from looking.
No,
at them,
they didn't. It didn't flag as AI when I saw them either. But
I guess I should Mountain Dew. Dew Dogs.
Yeah, Steve was announced actually.
Oh yeah, no, it is real. Apparently.
Okay.
No, this isn't real. Okay, it's not real.
Okay, it's a very.
I found a Reddit post that. I found a Reddit post that made it sound like it was real, but it's not.
It's actually very clever ruse.
Although now I've found a Reddit post that links to a YouTube video of a guy who puts. Oh my God, what is going on here? So he gets a Ziploc bag, mm-hmm. fills it with Mountain Dew, and then puts hot dogs inside the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. leaves them sitting out, and then then puts them on the grill. The now green hot dogs.
That is kind of what we talked about yesterday.
That
right?
is what we were talking about yesterday. Actually, yeah. My so, whole cry space was
marinade.
My cry space was going to be that these didn't come in the vegan brands. So I couldn't of course.
But now your cry space is that they don't exist at all.
But now I'm not crying anymore because I know they don't exist, and I now know how to make them at home with vegan hot dogs. I can simply
horrific.
I can make this a reality. To be fair, he does put a shit ton, honestly, way too much green food coloring in with them.
Oh yeah,
which is how they end up looking. They do look, you know, green. I don't think they would look like that if you just put them in Mountain, but maybe I don't know. I'll try and report back.
Please do. People deserve to know.
Horrific.
They do. We I
deserve
agree.
To know.
Yeah.
Alex, did you come up with anything?
Yeah. My cry space was that it was a Sunday night, and it's esports related because the Overwatch League is dead. It's been dead for a while, but they started a new thing, and it's boring. It's not fun to watch. But Sunday night, I caught the last three matches of the Apex Legends latest major, and it was really fun, and it was really exciting. And I'm sad I only watched three matches because it was just like, oh, I want to watch more.
I watched every game from Thursday Thursday morning to Sunday night.
So. I believe that. Okay.
And now they're not doing it for another few months. So,
yep, haven't played the game in 6 months, but I'm still invested in the esports scene.
Hell yeah,
yeah,
hell to the yeah.
You love to see it. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Crying in the Book Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Crying Book Club. Emily is at mpandanata on Twitter and Pandabore on Twitch and Letterboxd. Alex is at Alex Hanziak on Twitter. I'm JLBotBill on Letterboxd if you want to follow me there. See what I think about Aggro Drift. And also, the more excitingly, the new Ryusuke Hamaguchi movie, Evil Does Not Exist, which is finally coming out in U.S. theaters this weekend.
Hell yeah.
I will be there. But yeah, I think that'll do it. Are we doing The Pervert next time? I know we're doing
we have two Pride Month episodes. One of them is The Pervert. And the other is Gunjo, and I have gotten confirmation from Chad that he is interested in coming on for The Pervert. So I guess it will just depend on which ends up being easier to schedule next.
Sounds good. Well, you can look forward to that in 2 weeks.
The Pervert is by, it's Remy Boydell, and I know there's another writer, Remy Boydell is the artist. I don't remember.
Remy Boydell is the artist. It's written by,
I don't remember who the writer is.
Michelle Perez.
Okay, Michelle Perez. And then Gunjo is by Ching Nakamura. I just wanted to make sure that and anyone who is interested in doing their homework before these episodes knows what to look for.
Yep. So if you are a homework enjoyer, you know, there you go. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Bye.